and welcome to another...
The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
You hear that, Ern? The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, your number one audio source for Harry Potter news, theories, discussion, as well as info straight from the makers of the books and films themselves, like me, Matt Lewis. I play Neville Longbottom in the Harry Potter films, and I'm very happy to be here helping introduce your hosts, the Pottercast trio, Melissa, John, and Sue.
With only 24 weeks left until Voldemort kicks the bucket,
Pottercast.
75. Okay, you guys don't even let me tell people where they are before you start going off. Anyway.
They don't need to know where they're at.
They don't need to know. This is Pottercast 75. Welcome. I'm Melissa. I'm with John and Sue. And we have the first of a whole new era of Potter shows as we count down to the end.
Wow, Melissa, that was impressive.
Yeah.
You hit that level. That was good. So usually it's
my Oscar voice. You like me? Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a whole new time in Harry Potter fandom, and it's going to be followed with some amazing things going on here at Pottercast. In this show, we have a canon conundrum. It's not about anything that intense, but we're going to talk about. Well, you know, it's one of those things that you don't realize is a big thing until you start talking about it. Mm-hmm. In book 6, why Harry was invited to his sessions with Dumbledore from people who came up to him with notes of all the ways to invite Harry.
Very great school.
When you think about it, there's a lot of weird things about that note passing, so we'll discuss that in Canon Conundrums. Our fan interview stars the real stars of Pottercast, guys. The other trio. The other MJS. Mike, Jeff, and Steed. Not Melissa, John, and Sue. They're going to tell all our dirty secrets about what you don't hear in the show.
No.
I know. I haven't heard it yet, but I'm terrified. We also have a lot of news around the new announcement of the publication date, July 21st.
Ooh.
The last Harry Potter book. But before we do anything else, we have to hear from our lovely friends at Borders. Today's Pottercast is brought to you by Borders. Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows comes out on July 21st. Reserve your copy today for 40% off by clicking on the banner at the top of Pottercast.com, or just pick it up in person. You can visit BorderStores.com to locate the Borders store nearest you.
Ooh.
Time for bookstore planning, guys.
Oh, man.
Where are you going to be July 21st?
I think I'm going to get my book at Food Town.
What?
Actually.
All right. Anyway, don't forget, vote for us at Podcast Alley. Also, vote for us on or do the dig.com thing. It's the new thing. There's a link in the show notes. We're going to be at Phoenix Rising, the Harry Potter convention in New Orleans on May 17th to 20th.
Right.
It is the last Harry Potter convention that doesn't include a release of a Harry Potter book.
Yes.
So it should be exciting, or rather before the release of a Harry Potter book.
Right.
Our live podcast is May 17th. You can go to thephoenixrises.org to register. If you register, you automatically get a ticket to the podcast. And that is about it for the moment. So why don't we go to Sue and have her do some news?
Oh, I love when Sue does news.
Well, it's hard to imagine a bigger piece of information than the following. Author J.K. Rowling has announced that Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows will be released on July 21st, 2007. According to press releases from both the U.S. and U.K. publishers, the novel will be released in English-speaking countries everywhere at midnight on July 21st. This is, in fact, 8 days after the film Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix is due to be released, so this will make for an interesting and exciting summer for Potter fans everywhere, to say the least. Scholastic has announced that Mary Graham Prey will be back to do the illustrations for this new book, and there will also be a deluxe edition available as well. The UK publishers Bloomsbury announced that there will be both an adult and children's edition of the book released on July 21st, along with a special gift edition, and for the first time, the audiobook, narrated by Stephen Fry, will be released that very same day as well. With the announcement, many of the retailers, of course, began accepting pre-orders for the book, and the demand pushed the book to the top of the bestseller charts for Amazon.com, with sales up over 500% compared to the last time with the first week pre-orders for Half-Blood Prince. Wow. Well, we have a fun related story for you about how Joe finished the novel. Workers at the Balmoral Hotel in Edinburgh, Scotland, found a statue with the words written on it. J.K. Rowling finished writing Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows in this room, 652, on January 11th, 2007. This has been confirmed to Leaky as being true. It's true. Cool. And you can see a photo of this inscription on our galleries. The book has since been turned into the publishers, and Joe is editing the book. Well, as if this weren't enough, there was a bit of a firestorm over some revealing and stunning new photos of actor Dan Radcliffe promoting his upcoming appearance in the play Equus later this month. Dan has since given a brand new interview where he talks about these photos, and he said he is comfortable with the nudity in this play as it is essential to this very dark drama about a disturbed young man. You can see these photos as well as read all of Dan's candid and interesting comments regarding the photos and much more on our website. Finally, the Wizarding Rock community has come together under the leadership of Harry and the Potters to launch a Wizard EP of the Month Club, where with your paid membership you will get 12 exclusive CDs featuring music from some of the great Wizard Rock groups out there, as well as help provide books to those most in need. All proceeds from this event will benefit charity, and for more you can click on our website. Speaking of the Leaky Cauldron, we do have complete coverage of all things Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, including a new countdown clock and much more, so be sure to click on leakynews.com, and we will have all the news and information regarding what will surely be an amazing next 6 months for Harry Potter fans, you can bet. Well, that will do it for this week, and back to the show we go.
Well, really, there's really no other news worth discussing than July 21st, 2007.
It is just amazing. I mean, when we got that release date, I just, you know, you think, oh, okay, here's a number. And then you start looking at the calendar, and then you realize it's only a matter of weeks. Like you said, 24 weeks. And you're like, holy smokes, here it comes.
24 weeks.
Whoa.
So now a lot of people have been talking about how close this is to the movie.
Yeah.
July 13th, 2007, the Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix film comes out. Which, by the way, speaking of time, if you are at all curious how much longer there's going to be before this book and this film,
yeah,
at any given time, of any given day. You just go to Leaky and pick one of three countdowns we've got going on the main page. You can have a countdown for your film, you can have a countdown for your book, or you can have a countdown for both of them at once.
Yeah.
It's lovely, I gotta say. What the hell, guys?
I don't know what, it's just, you know, I mean, it's hard for me to respond sometimes when I keep thinking about all these numbers and it's coming, and I just, you know, I think it's, I was talking to a lot of people about this, and they just had that, the word bittersweet, you know, the reaction was,
mm-hmm.
You go, you're excited, you know that it's here, but at the same time, you're still not, and I still think, for me, I'm still, I don't know if I've processed it yet. I don't know, does that sound goofy? I don't know.
No, I
hadn't really processed it for a little bit until I started looking at the actual, you know, counting down on to the day.
Yeah.
On our handy dandy countdowns on Leaky,
which is brilliant, yeah. John. Wonderful.
And thought, oh well. And I looked at it and I got to the part in the script where it says, "What do you want to say when it happens?" And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, what's going to happen when it happens?" And then, oh. Really start to think about it. And I hadn't thought about it really up until that moment. It was very strange. What does happen?
So what does it say? Don't tell us.
That's a big secret.
It's a big secret. When the day
could
arrives, the
picture.
Countdown will change. Oh
yeah.
Geez. Okay.
Could be a dancing person.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Could be.
Well, a lot of people have been talking about how close this is to the film. And, you know, I think there's a lot of misunderstanding.
Right.
Yes, there is marketing that's going to happen cross, but I mean, the day that you see a picture of Dan Radcliffe near a Harry Potter book is, I mean, it isn't. It just doesn't exist. That's not going to happen. There will be no literary stuff tied into the movie officially. You know, that's not the way this publicity is going to work. They've always separated these two to think, you know, Joe has been very, very specific about all of that. What I did realize would start to happen, though, is when I started reading articles about it, how this marketing is brilliant, much more brilliant than we ever thought. Every time there's an article written about Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, it will say at the bottom, the last Harry Potter book comes out July 21st. Every time there's an article written about Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, it will say at the bottom, Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, the fifth film, comes out July 13th, just 8 days before, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
It's going to be mentioned in conjunction. They will both push each other naturally. Scholastic, yeah. Warner Brothers, they don't have to do a thing. And they will cheapen it by doing too much over cross-promotion. We're not talking about posters and leaflets. That's silly. You know?
Yeah. It's just interesting to me, though, because there's been a lot of concern that it'll be oversaturation. You know? I mean, you'll just be... That whole month of July will just be nothing but Potter, which, like you said, there's a cross, you know, like, you know, mentioning of each thing. But I agree. I think it'll be two different things. I mean, you're not going to see Mary Grandpré morphed in with, you know, Hermione. It's just not going to, your artwork is just not going to be there. I agree with you. I mean, but you're right. It's going to be, you can't escape it because the two are intertwined and people are all like, well, I mean, it's going to hurt the movie business next weekend. Although, I mean, do you think it will? Because, I mean, we were talking about this, like, that next weekend that the movie comes out. I mean, it opens wide July 13th, but then the next weekend the book comes out, will people go to the movie theater?
You know, the next weekend will be hard, I have to say. But then again, there's a huge audience of Harry Potter fans who don't read the books. They just go to the movies. I'm not saying that's going to make it a number one at the box office, because we're all going to be sitting down reading the book.
Yeah.
But most, the majority of Harry Potter fans don't power through it in 12 hours the way we do.
Yeah, that's
true. The majority
true.
Of Harry Potter fans are going to read it over a couple of days and have time to go see a movie at night.
Yeah.
If they really want to.
Sure. They'll be all in the mood to see it. They'll be like, oh, this is so cool. Hey, the movie's playing. Maybe I'll go see the movie. Take a break from the book.
Yeah.
I don't know who's going to do that. But
I don't know either.
It's possible.
I don't know how.
Warner Brothers probably
understand.
Sure hopes it's possible.
Well, I don't understand how people can put it down once they open. I don't get it.
I am seriously going to. You guys aren't going to see me for like a week after that thing comes out.
Okay.
I'm going to take it in a little chunk.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Seriously.
Can I just say this? Something else. This is just kind of a tangent thing. But we had a conversation with some of my friends. Do you think that this means that, like, they're like, oh, this means that Harry's going to live? Because who's going to want to go see a movie after you read a book that Harry dies? So, I don't know.
It could equally be, oh, this means Harry's going to die, because then the people have something else to go see him in after he dies. It'll be uplifting, you know?
Oh. I guess that's true, but I don't know.
So,
ever the optimist, I guess.
Yeah, seriously. So watching that movie right after knowing the end of it will be really weird.
Yeah. Really weird.
Well,
reading every other book and every other movie after reading book 7 is going to be a whole new experience.
Yeah. Oh.
Especially as far as Snape's concerned. You're going to question every little acting from Alan Rickman, who apparently knew about all of this. And you're going to just read the character differently in all the other books. Mm-hmm. And book 1 will be a whole different experience.
Well, that brings us to the natural question that we've been getting all the time. A lot of people seem to assume that the end... of books, that book 7 coming out means the end of Pottercast.
Huh?
What?
Oh, well, I haven't really seen no reason why we should keep doing Pottercast.
Okay, John.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? After book 7 comes out, there's a whole world of things to go back over and discuss, discover what hasn't been answered, discover all the questions we do have remaining. I mean, there's so much Potter left, not to mention two more movies.
Right.
So we are around, guys. Leaky will be open. Pottercast will be going. Don't worry.
Yes, don't panic. We have gotten some emails and people are already panicked, and we're not, you know, we were talking too that, you know, I mean, the book release is coming out in the middle of Seek This. Prophecy will just be mad with people going over all the theories, and people will be talking all that long. It'll be fabulous. And that's what we'll be doing on Leaky and Pottercast too. I mean, John can sit there and say he's not going to be here, but he'll be there. So don't believe him.
I'm under contract. Yeah. I can't go anywhere.
Yeah. Well, some of the news announcements around all this have been pretty funny. I personally, my favorite is the one about that the book is being edited. I mean, I love me some news round. I love Lizzo, but of course the book is being edited. Of course it is. That's what happens. And it just made me realize that a lot of people don't know that. So here's a little rundown. What usually happens, I don't have no insider info. I'm going from past experience. The book arrives, and the January 11th date makes sense because the book arrives. They take about 2 weeks. The editors give it a first read. They spot anything glaring that might take longer than usual to fix, if there is anything. Don't know if there is, you know.
Right.
They have all their meetings, all the secrecy, and they discuss plans, and they discuss a date. once that's all settled and they do whatever legal and agent things they need to do, mm-hmm. then the announcement happens. Then it goes into editing. People read it a million times. The American editor and the British editor sit down together. Arthur Levine and Emma from Bloomsbury sit down together and go over what might need to be changed for clarity purposes and make sure that all the translations are right. They keep it under the strictest security, so strict they can't even talk about the security measures, much like the Secret Service of the United States. It will be there until probably about, I think it's 2 months out is when it starts going to print. I could be wrong about that. I think it's about 2 months out, and then about a month out, it starts being delivered all around the world. So we're probably going to get cover art around June. That's when we got it for Half-Blood Prince.
Right.
Though for Order of the Phoenix, we got it in April, and it was a June release date. So 1 to 2 months before the book comes out, we'll be getting cover art. And in the meantime, the only updates about the book that we should believe are if they came from J.K. Rowling's mouth or they're on her website.
Or the Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
Yeah.
Except for one day a year.
Which is what day would that be, John?
I do not know, but
June 11th.
Could possibly be coming up.
Yes, in a few months. But that was a good rundown. That was a really good rundown for people who don't understand the process that is happening, and I think that was really important for people to understand that, you know?
And it's been publicly reported before, so there's nothing covert about all this. The Daily News did an article about how the book is kept in a room they call the Chamber of Secrets. That was all in newspapers last time around. There's no bigger security. And that's what makes me wonder about when she signed that bust in the hotel.
We should tell people that is my favorite story that we had this last week. I mean, besides from the release, is that Joe was wrote the book at a hotel called the Balmoral Hotel in Edinburgh, and she apparently signed a bust, which we've just now found out that is Hermes, a statue, and she wrote J.K. Rowling finished Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows in room so and so on January 11th. Which I think is cool. Rockstar, you go, Joe.
I think it's awesome. Thank you.
Is that going to go up on eBay anytime soon?
No, it is not going up. The hotel is not making the room into like a big shrine either. And
why not?
Can you imagine? I mean, it would be like, you know.
Yeah, no.
What hotel is this? Are they going to increase the rates for that room?
Harry's hotel is beautiful.
Yeah, it's a beautiful hotel. Yeah.
Well, you figure Joe's there, for God's sakes. I mean, who can afford to go there? Joe and Trump, Gates, and like the Queen or something. That's a very small club.
Talking about that hotel, look how far she's come. I mean, she wrote Single Mom and struggling in these cafes, and look where she finished writing that in this elegant, beautiful, majestic place. And I think that's just...
I mean, she used to run around with Jessica in the stroller waiting for her to fall asleep so that she can go into a cafe and write as much as possible while buying as little as possible so that she could stay in the cafe. Like, that was her life back then, and that was Harry's beginnings on a train where nobody cared that she was sitting there having the revelation that would make her a billionaire. Nobody cared, and now people want to know exactly where she finished. And if Harry died, Harry might have died in that room. You know what I mean? Like, it's huge. It's a moment in literary history. How far she's come.
It is. Oh, and I thought it was as really. I just thought it was really befitting, actually. I mean, that's great. But, you know, look at she's done. So, good. Cheers to you, Joe. That just was.
Cheers.
Butterbeer cheers.
Cheers.
Johnny, you need a
butterbeer.
A little.
The other thing about the announcement, guys, is this was a very weird announcement from Joe, I have to say.
Right.
Yeah.
No games, no secret room. Nothing. Just a little thing on her site. No warning like last time. Nothing. And I have to say, Spidey senses are tingling. Something else is coming. Something's coming. I think there's an announcement coming about the plans for the release. That's my personal...
Possibly.
Because this was too quiet of her. There isn't even an emotional note in there, and we know that she's very emotional about the end of this series.
Can you imagine? What I mean, I know everyone's all like instantly said, oh, we're going to go straight to Edinburgh. And
well, that's where she was for the last two releases. Maybe, you know, that's where she's written it. It's
probably getting
very
bored
of
it.
Yeah.
I don't want to be in Edinburgh anymore. Get me out of here. I want to go somewhere else. Like Iceland.
Do you think she's going to go?
Wouldn't that be awesome?
What if
Book 7 was, like, set in, like, a really Arctic area where, like, the Horcrux could be.
Iceland is green,
you
know.
If you could release it in Greenland where it's icy.
Ah, there you go.
Ooh, I'm kind of smart.
Look at you.
Iceland's cooler than Greenland, though, I got to say. Sorry, all you Greenlanders that are listening.
So all three of them hate you. Okay. Yeah.
They're all huddled up in that one house that has the internet.
But go back to that announcement.
Yeah. But don't you feel like it's unfinished? Don't you feel like this is not done?
Yeah.
Maybe Lightmaker fell asleep with the ball on the job. Dropped the ball.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm always hopeful, though. I mean, because we still do have that third wombat. Maybe there's something coming at the end of the wombat. You know, maybe we'll see those soon because she said, you know, another one's coming, so...
This was so quiet. Yeah. I would bet things on it. There's something coming.
Yeah, for certainly.
For certainly.
Maybe she'll say, that was a big joke. It's coming out in 2009.
She could come do a thing on Pottercast with us. That'd be rocking. Come out and hang out with us.
That's probably what she's waiting on, actually.
Yeah, the invite? Oh, yeah, we've got that in the mail.
And we keep forgetting to do that. It was like postmarked a year ago.
Yes. Anyway, of course, as soon as she made the announcement, within hours, the book had rocketed to the top of the Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble bestseller list, breaking all previous records, something like 500% of what happened the day that the Half-Blood Prince was announced.
It's an astonishing amount of books. I mean, considering the last time that they sold 1.5 million copies of the book, pre-orders. So can you imagine what it is now?
I wonder what the print run is going to be. I'm sure we're going to get an announcement from Scholastic about it. Last time the print run was 10.8 million. I'm guessing it's going to be about 15 million this time.
That's a lot of books.
That's my guess. Also in the news this week, Dan and his new bod in the Equus.
Dan has a new bod? What's his name?
He's been working out.
I'll say it.
Dan Radcliffe's been...
Do you think he's going to post his routine up online somewhere? Like what his meals are normally and what exercises he does.
I really hope not.
I don't think so.
That'd be a good exclusive.
For who? Men's Health Daily?
Yeah. HarryPottersHealth.com.
Yeah. Ooh, good name. Those pictures, I mean, people are freaking out. Guys, the play, this not a porn play. We've discussed this in and out. Equus is, when you see it, you're going to understand. Equus is...
Most of them won't see it.
That, but they're going to hear reports from people who do. And it is a very intense psychological drama. It is impossible, like Dan says, to do it without going full bore at it, doing the whole... Because I hate to even call it, but it's a climactic scene, very important scene, about what a sexual incident did to this child. So... It's so important. It's beyond important. It is the play. He couldn't have done this play justice without doing this.
But you know what? I give Dan a lot of credit. I mean, we saw a new interview with him recently, and he was very candid about this, you know, and the poses, his being nude doesn't bother him. He's comfortable with it now. And I give him a lot of credit for that. I mean, and people are like, this is not our Harry, you know, how could he do this? Well, he's also an actor.
He's an actor.
Don't forget that.
Yeah.
And these are his choices he's doing with his career. And while we always have him as Harry Potter, he can certainly do this. And, I support him, and I think what he does is great, and more power to him. So go for it.
Yeah. Huh? So it is going to be a little strange after this, seeing him chastely kiss a girl in Harry Potter 5.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
True.
But then again, it will be, you know, if he can pull that off, it just means that he's that much more of an actor. And I think he's smart because he's heading into very dangerous territory, doing all these films, having the Mark Hamill syndrome occur.
Right.
You know? To really,
he's not going
to
be a Mark Hamill.
I don't think so either. Because he's doing things like this, he won't be.
You know, but I will say those photos were very well done. And, I can understand why, as a parent, you know, maybe you would hesitate to look at them but because they were, you know, but... They're just really well done, so good for him.
Well, some of the reports you're going to hear about that play will almost positively come directly from here, directly from Pottercast.
Pottercast!
So the three of us are trying to head over there at the end of the month. John and I are definitely booked. We're still waiting to hear if Sue can go. Everybody send your good wishes that Sue can go. And
cross your fingers, twist your toes.
Yeah, we're going to try and get over there and see it and see a bunch of the theater that all our Harry Potter stars are in. Maggie Smith is in a show, though we're going to miss that. Fiona Shaw is in a show. Jason Isaacs is in a show.
Oh, he is?
So we're going to try and do a big theater going. Aw, Sue.
So, lots more Dan coverage, I suppose. And that'll be my first trip to the theater.
To the theater in the Yucca.
Very excited. Yeah. The theaters in the Yucca, the old West End.
Let's go on and hear this fan interview that I'm sort of terrified of the editors, the podcast editors
yeah.
talking about
oh, yes.
what they do here. And all the things that hit the cutting room floor.
I hope they don't release too many of our secrets.
You know, we really should have made them sign our confidentiality agreement. We just sort of forgot.
How we put everything through an auto-tuner to harmonize our voices together.
That's right. Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
Sorry.
Because we sound so gorgeous.
Then our canon conundrums about what was up with all those people handing Harry notes and half-blood.
What was up with all the kids doing the things?
We'll see you after.
All right.
Bye-bye.
In the Fan Corner, a one-on-one interview with a new lucky fan each week.
Not me, not Hermione, you.
Hello, this is Kimberly Blair, otherwise known as Kimmy Blair throughout the forums, and I am here with our three lovely Pottercast editors who are so readily agreed to do an interview for me. We first have Mike Davers, Jeff Gregory, and Steve Bonnet, who are responsible for helping bring this podcast to you every week. How are you guys doing today?
Pretty good.
I'm good.
Doing good.
Good to hear. Now, you guys see a lot of the, well, not see, obviously, but hear a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff. I don't know if you guys want to share some of your favorite experiences that you've had in Pottercast. Mike, do you want to start off?
Well, in general, my favorite parts are the wrap-up segments. Those segments are generally looser than some of the other things that we have to do. And we don't really have to worry that much about things being off topic because the entire segment is usually off topic. just as an example, the last show that we did, Pottercast 71, when Sue got extremely squeeful at the end, I was pretty much in hysterics listening to that thing several times over. And just little things like that, just I have a really good time doing that stuff.
So do you ever lose your eardrums? Because you guys edit out the louder end of the squeeing. Do you ever get, like, unexpectedly, ah! Or,
kind of depends on how loud I've got the headphones.
Now, Jeff, do you have a favorite moment, favorite experience you want to share with us?
I think that my favorite part of thinking about this is just like the change in Melissa, John, and Sue, just their confidence from the beginning. Because listening back, if you go back to the very first episodes, you know, there's like with Sue when she does her news, you could tell her voice was kind of shaky. It's awesome just listening to the difference between the first episodes and the episodes and what they're doing now. There's just much more confidence and much more free. And they're having so much more fun now.
Have they gotten a lot sillier also as they've progressed?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Steve, do you have a favorite experience you want to share with us?
Oh, well, I've been working on the show a little longer. I've done a lot of the interview segments and, you know, modcasts and things. But I like the best when we have, you know, the big star interviews, like when Jamie Whalen comes on the show and they're there for the whole episode. Those are great because even though they're kind of hard to assemble, they basically sit down with them and they record for, you know, an hour, hour and a half, the whole show. But it's not in order. They'll record like stuff that winds up in the middle and they'll do stuff at the end that's actually the beginning. And then they do little outtake things with them that we use at the front of the show. So those are probably the most fun to do because there's the most creative amount of work to be done on them. You can rearrange the show and you can, you know, write the middle of the show yourself by just cutting things together.
That's really cool. I didn't know you guys did that. I just,
mm-hmm.
I knew like they taped, you know, they don't always tape the show chronologically, but I didn't realize when they did those interviews like that, you could switch them up a little bit.
Yeah, with those, they get off topic, you know, in the intro segment. And they start talking about things that are going to come later that would be part of the EE type segments. So rearrange things into their appropriate pieces and then try and make it sound coherent and not reference things out of order.
Now, how long would something like that take approximately?
Oh, like a complete rearranging one on like an hour plus long. It's about three times as long as it is.
Wow.
So about 3 to 4 hours. To get it all rearranged and get the parts cut out that need to be removed. And that's after you've done your little pre-setups where you make sure they're all synchronized.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a while, but it's worth it to make a good long show out of it.
Wow. Now, you guys get to hear the stuff that we don't normally, as Pottercast listeners,
yes.
get to listen to, the stuff that gets cut out. What is your favorite thing that, you know, has been cut out that you wish you could put in, but it just wouldn't fit, or it was just way too off topic? Some of the stuff that didn't make it into the part at the end.
Outtakes.
Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for. Thank you. Mike, do you have a favorite part that just made you, like, hysterically laugh you didn't ever make it in?
Oh, definitely. The stuff that I like the most is when a fire engine goes by or someone's cell phone rings, and then there's all kinds of cursing. It anyone that's listened to Lose the Tone knows what can happen, and that stuff just puts me on the floor.
Like the heaters that go off and...
Exactly.
Now, do they ever try to cover it up, or are they just full steam, just, like, yell?
No, I don't think they're trying to cover it up very much.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Jeff, do you have a favorite story for us?
Basically, you know, just the same type of stuff, but it happens every week. There's always something like that, you know, Melissa's phone's always going off, like... Every other week, pretty much. A lot of that stuff ends up in the outtakes, the stuff that we can put in. There's a few times when John will get a little inappropriate that we can't put in.
Oh,
we
no.
Can't even put it in the
what?
Outtakes either, so.
That would never happen.
Those parts are funny. We just can't air those parts. But.
Yeah.
That's why it's good to be an editor.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Did you have a good story for us?
Oh, not really a story, but when those things happen, they break out of the show and they leave notes for us. They'll talk to us and say, hey, how are you doing? You know, we're sorry. Yeah. This is a problem.
So do they ever leave notes like, please edit this part out?
Oh, yes. Oh, Melissa does that all the time.
Does she?
And it usually has like, something
John,
to do with John.
Edit that out.
And I kind of wish I could get my hands on some of these before tapes. Okay, now, I don't know if one of you just kind of wants to talk through the process of editing every week, just what you use, what tool you take, approximately how long it takes, some tips you have for other people who edit podcasts out there.
Well,
anyone?
Bueller?
Bueller.
Okay, because I could talk about it, seeing as I'm editing this episode this week, but I don't think that would really get us much help. Well, I guess what is the number one problem you see in files? Do you see a lot of background noise you have to correct out? Or
that's probably my biggest issue with what we've got to do. Every once in a while, there's weird sync dropout recording problems, but for the most part, it's just background noise.
Yeah, background noise, people's cell phones syncing in with those little tick noises you hear occasionally. And yeah, tracks like to go out of sync. People will drop a few seconds here and there, and the files will be different lengths, and you have to figure out where that happened.
Now, do you guys have a favorite segment you like to edit, one that kind of goes easier?
Segments with fewer files.
So fan interviews have to be your favorite, huh?
So fan interviews would be really high on the list, yes.
Plus, you guys get to listen to me talk for a while, so that's always a highlight, I'm sure. Okay. And what program is it that you guys use, usually? Do you use all the same one or different ones, or...?
I'm sure we all three use different stuff.
I use a combination of Sony SoundForge and Sony Vegas.
I also use a combination of SoundForge and Vegas, so I guess we don't use that much different stuff.
Well, I use different stuff.
Such as?
I usually use Nero Wave Editor to do noise reduction and a few other things. And for mixing, I use a program called Sonar.
Now, is there anything else you guys want to share with us today? This is your guys' one time to talk to the listeners.
I would just say that doing this is a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And while we don't get a whole lot of recognition for doing it, I don't really care about that. I don't do it because I expect to become a famous podcast editor. I do it because it's a lot of fun. Editing a Canon Conundrum segment, I learn stuff just by... You know, being involved in that, and it's just a ton of fun for me.
Maybe a good question to ask would be, how did you guys all, are you guys new to the Harry Potter fandom? You guys been around for a while?
I got started at movie one and got instantly hooked and have been insane about it ever since.
I got started after movie three came out. Pretty much the same thing. Been crazy. Since then, so
yeah, I was a movie fan from the beginning, but I didn't really start reading the books until just before the POA movie came out, and then I read all of them all at once.
Now, did you guys brag about how you are podcast editors, podcast editors to your friends?
Oh, of course.
Most of them have no concept of what that means.
Exactly.
What's a podcast?
Now, do any of you guys have like technical jobs where you kind of use this stuff at work, or is this just stuff you do on the side for fun?
I do a lot of this at work since I work with kids, and I do a lot of theater tech stuff. There's a lot of times through the year that I have to edit songs together, put sound effects together, so I do a lot of that at work.
I don't do that at work anymore, although I used to work in radio, and I used to be a production person making commercials and as a DJ, but I just do this for fun at this point.
Yeah, and I'm just a computer technician, so I have all the hardware and stuff, and I've been using the software and things since high school when I got into it. So I just been picking it up, and when way back in episode 9, I think it was, when John said, hey, if anyone knows how to edit, please send me an email. I was like, sure, I could try to do that. I sort of did that a few years ago.
Now, Jeff and Mike, how long have you guys been editing?
I don't remember what show I came in on. I'm thinking it was around in the high 20s. 26 or 27.
I know I responded to John's request, I don't know, 16, 17, 18, someplace in there.
Wow. Okay. Any last thoughts you guys have? Any other notes you got, Jeff, on your piece of paper? Other than how much you love Chloe? No.
No.
Well, that's right. We're supposed to say that, aren't we?
Chloe is awesome.
Chloe rocks.
She keeps us in line. I wouldn't know what to do if she wasn't around.
Did she send that to you?
Yes, my phone wouldn't ring half as much.
Nor would mine.
Mine too.
Okay, well, thank you for joining us. Once again, this is Kimmy Blair, and I'm here with Mike Neighbors, Jeff Gregory, and Steve Bonnet, our three podcast editors. Bye, guys.
Well, thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Can't wait to hear what you edit this to. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.
Cheers.
Time for Canon Conundrums featuring Steve Vander Ark from the Harry Potter Lexicon. Listen in as our panel tries to figure out one specific issue from the Harry Potter canon.
Who could possibly figure that out?
Welcome to another Canon Conundrums.
Canon Conundrum.
Thank you. Is that? That's not John.
Yeah.
Who's faking
John? The best
John?
We can do this week.
We've got a bit of a different Canon Conundrum crew here. I'm Melissa. I'm here with Jason and the lovely Doris and the lovely Sue. John and Steve were so excited by the release date coming out. They're out in a bar somewhere.
That's right.
Between Florida and where Steve lives, which is like Michigan, right? We have a very interesting topic this week. It's why it's something that if you stop and think about it, you didn't even realize it was a thing. But once you think about it, you go, huh?
Yeah.
In Half-Blood Prince, whenever Harry has a lesson with Dumbledore, he's approached by a student with a note. And it's weird. And we want to know why. Why these particular people gave him these notes in this way.
Would it be worth it just to go through
yes,
the five
probably.
Really quick? Well, the first note he gets is from a kid named Jack Sloper. And this is when Dumbledore is calling him to look at the memory of the Gaunt's house. And Jack Sloper is a Quidditch player, yeah, Gryffindor.
He's a Gryffindor beater from the fifth year.
Okay, so the second note is delivered by Ginny Weasley. Third note is delivered by Hermione. She doesn't even say anything. She just takes it out of her pocket when they're returning from, I think, from the holidays or something, and she just hands it to him. Mm-hmm. Fourth one is delivered by Luna Lovegood, and that was when they watched the memory of young or slightly older Tom Riddle with Hepzibah Smith and some other things. And then the fifth note is delivered by a kid named Jimmy Peaks, who is also a Quidditch player, another beater, and I think he's also a Gryffindor.
You know, what's interesting about all these people is that when they hand Harry the note, they never say where they got it from or
right.
who it's from or anything about it. Just here's a note for you.
Every time it's either they just hand it to him mutely or they say, I was told to give you this or I'm supposed to give you this. They don't say who gave it to them. There's no indication of, you know, any Dumbledore interaction. It's always Harry who looks at it and says, you know, oh, he recognizes the handwriting or he sees the signature and realizes that it's another call to a lesson.
So are we wondering if Dumbledore even gave them the notes? Or
well, there's a lot of things to wonder. Yeah, I guess that could be. I mean, and if so, how did he get them to these students and why?
There's so many things to start with, you know. How would Dumbledore normally have gotten the notes to Harry? I mean, what would have been saying Hedwig or?
Well, a reader in the lounge, I think it's Fire Phoenix, says that up until book 6, every one of Harry's messages at Hogwarts is delivered to him by Hedwig. Now, if you're Dumbledore and you have every method available to you in Hogwarts of telling Harry, think about all the different ways that Dumbledore could conjure. Why this way?
Right. He's got all the ghosts. He's got, you know, teachers.
What makes me wonder is, you know, normally I would think Hedwig would be the way it would happen. So where was Hedwig? Why didn't she do it? And then is it these specific students for a reason? Like Ginny, Hermione, Luna? Okay, I can see them delivering messages. But the other two guys, you know, Jack and Jimmy, we don't really know a lot about them. They're kind of, it reminds me of one of those things like the name Sirius Black. You hear it, and it seems like it's just a name, and then later on, it's a huge deal.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe not.
And people were, full disclosure, probably everything I say will not be an original thought, because I read like several pages of this thread, and it was just fascinating and brilliant ideas in there. But if you look at the names of those two guys, you know, they both sort of have this sort of feel of like landscape and like mountains or hills or something. And I don't know, it just seems very coincidental. And I think a question could be asked, obviously the question, why did Dumbledore choose to deliver his notes this way? But, you know, also why did, you know, maybe the question is more, why did Joe write it this way? Is there some symbolism here or some clue here that she's trying to deliver?
That's a good point, Jason. And this, you're all going to just kill me and hate me, but I'm just going to say this. I know. I'm going to be just like the big wet blanket here. You know, see, I don't think that there's so much a mystery here. I personally thought that this was just a literary device of Joe to introduce the characters, just to show that Harry has some sort of interaction with the student body. I just thought it was purely on that surface attempt to show that he has this interaction and that there's a trust, an inherent trust among the Gryffindor family or house or whatever you were. I mean, even though it's Luna, Luna's one of them too, right?
Right. But, yeah, she's the only non-Gryffindor.
And that Harry is respected and trusted. And I just thought it was just a way to establish that she's subtly showing how Harry is becoming this a leader. And so for me, this was just purely another way to show the rise of Harry's character among the students.
I mean, it does seem like it's deliberate. And maybe if that's the case, maybe that's Dumbledore's intention. Maybe he's, you know, wants, I don't know, to somehow involve these people in Harry's lessons or, you know, somehow, like, however obliquely in, you know, what's going on between the two of them.
Well, it's a good way to strengthen the relationship between Harry and other characters that we don't see as much, to show that there's that bond with them. If they all have to unite to fight this together, you know, going back to the Sorting Hat song, then maybe, you know, he's going to have to pull on more Gryffindor help than just the usual trio and the other guys that are in there helping him in Dumbledore's army.
Okay, here's something, though. I'm 16, right? Millennia ago. You get a note, I sort of feel like sometimes, you get a note, and whether or not it's from Dumbledore, absolutely, but if it's from your person who sits next to you in English, the first thing you want to do is open that note.
Yeah.
So not only do they come to him with none of them, obviously Hermione or Ginny would respect it, you know, Luna would respect it, Jack Sloper and Jimmy Peaks, maybe not. So they come to him with no knowledge of what's in it, no knowledge of who gave it to him, whether Dumbledore or whether it just appeared in their bag. I think they're under a spell. I think it's like a contract.
It does kind of have that feel about it. It just seems too fishy. Like, why none of them say, Dumbledore told me to give you this, or say how they got it? It's weird. I think you might be right.
Dumbledore could wave a wand and have the note appear in Harry's bag. There's no reason to have these intermediaries.
Well, but you know, we don't know where Dumbledore is when he gives these notes. I mean, you were talking about where Hedwig was. So, I mean, he wouldn't send her if he's just upstairs in his office, would he? I mean, do they normally send owls swooping all the time, or they just come at mail time, right?
Did Hagrid send Harry an owl, a note by owl one time?
Yeah, but he lives across the grounds.
That's true. But yeah, no, it's a good point, Sue.
You know?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, we don't know if Dumbledore is in Hogwarts at the time or you know, if he's, I don't know.
He was out and about on the Horcrux hunt. Well, and McGonagall couldn't have given it to him, right? Because she didn't know a lot about what was going on, right? Is that right?
I guess McGonagall would have read it as well, and he didn't want her to know. Maybe because students, you can put this spell on students, whereas McGonagall might be a little harder, and she might try and find out what's in it. I don't know.
One thing that people mentioned was that just the fact that, you know, if it was, you know, just Dumbledore trying to be subtle about it and not call attention to these things, that these were all people who would have reason to talk to Harry. It doesn't really address the fact that they're kind of weird about it and don't talk about where they got the note. But, you know, just the fact of why these five, you know, maybe it's better than
suspicion, so
than Dumbledore coming up and handing it to him or something.
That's true.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's look at what lesson was what. Jack Slipper gave him the note that resulted in the lesson that was going back to the memory of the Gaunt's house about the ring. Ginny gave him the note, interestingly, about the lesson that involved the diary.
Right.
Hermione gave him the note that was the lesson that involved the lockets, the first mention of Horcruxes. Luna gives him the note that results in a lesson about Lord Voldemort's request, the memory of Hepzibah, and Hokey. Now, that's interesting because that's the lesson where they talk about the different items that he thinks that Voldemort has acquired, interestingly, one of Ravenclaw's. So, again, Luna might, you know, if this has anything to do with each other. The fifth lesson, actually, he didn't get a note for. That was that was the Slughorn memory of the Horcrux.
He went up there, right after he got the memory. He went straight to Dumbledore's office.
And Jimmy Peaks gives him a lesson that has to do with the cup. Now, if you, one of the readers, I think it was Tower Dweller, I'm not sure, one of the readers in our lounge put these all together and figured that each of these lessons corresponds to an existing Horcrux. The one without a note would have then had to have been Nagini. So Jack Sloper is about the ring, Ginny Weasley is about the diary, Hermione Granger is about the locket, Luna Lovegood is the item of Ravenclaw. Though it doesn't totally line up because you still have the item of Gryffindor, and the diary isn't really in existence anymore, you know, but it's still interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Yeah.
Wow, this goes back to me, though, that she's just using this as another symbolic literary device. I don't, you know, I mean, it's just, that's so clever, though. I didn't realize about the cards, that's just, or the Horcruxes, I mean, that's amazing. God, if she just puts that kind of thought in that little obscure detail, geez. Wow. Okay, sorry. Man-girl moment.
Well, another person mentioned that every single one of these people is only connected through Quidditch.
Except for Hermione.
Hermione.
Luna doesn't play, but she commentated.
She commented.
That commentary is the best. I love that.
I think it's my favorite part of the sixth book.
But yeah, entirely. Two of them are really only, you know, as far as we know, only connected to Harry through Quidditch. Like, they don't really come into the books.
Well, and they're Gryffindor.
Yeah, that's true.
They are in the same house.
Yeah. You don't want to let it go because it seems like it can't be just accidental. But it's so hard to figure out, you know, what it could mean. Is she just playing with symbols? Is she giving clues?
And you know what else I'm kind of noticing looking at this list? The one person that I would have thought would have been in there that would deliver him a message would have been Ron.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, why isn't he delivering a message? If it's Ginny and it's Hermione and it's Luna, Ron should be in there. It just seems right that he is, but he doesn't.
Ron was pretty messed up for most of this book.
Yeah. That or he's always with Harry.
Yeah.
You know?
I think the only reason that Hermione, I mean, she probably would have been the same, like, but there was just that one time when she was at Hogwarts before Ron and Harry got back, and because otherwise she might have been in the same position, been, like, too much with Harry to actually be able to give him a note. But it is interesting, like, how did she get the note? Like, if she got it from Dumbledore, what was she doing with Dumbledore? She only got there a few hours before they did, you know.
And why didn't she go up to him and say, Dumbledore,
get it? Yeah. I want to read that one, actually, because that one really just seemed kind of odd. Like, Harry's talking about, oh, I guess she does say, I've got something for you, Harry. And then they continue to talk a little more. And then she rummages in her pocket for a moment, then pulled out a scroll of parchment with Dumbledore's writing on it. And she doesn't say anything, and then Harry says, you know, oh, okay, I've got another lesson. Doesn't that seem un-Hermione-ish? Like, she doesn't say what it is beforehand. She doesn't say, I was talking to Dumbledore about my studies, and he told me to give you this.
Yeah, I know. Nobody asks Hermione, you know,
right.
Where did you get it from? And it is unlike Hermione. Hermione tells them all about everything she did while they weren't there. She didn't say, oh, I ran across Dumbledore. He's looking different. He's looking worried. That's Hermione. She's a little chatty.
Right. That's a very good point. Wow. You know, that's the thing about when we do these conundrums. You know, a lot of times we go into it and, you know, you have your mind made up. I'm like, okay, this is just this. And then I think, whoa. And I hear you guys talking. I'm like, whoa. So it's just amazing.
Yeah.
I would have never thought that, you know.
I don't know that we're going to get anywhere with this. It's just so vague.
It's like, but we're like, okay, let's go.
But and there's so much to it. Like, why isn't and Hedwig there and Sloper and Peaks? They're,
right.
You know, they don't really fit into the equation at all, really, they're there.
I really liked what people were saying. I mean, it started to get into some tarot stuff that I didn't really understand.
Me neither.
But
I sort of skimmed when it got to the tarot stuff.
But, I mean, they're talking about how, I mean, actually in the memory of the lesson that comes about from the note that Sloper gives, the very first one, but there's twice, like, a mention of sloping or something sloping or slopes.
In the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In the landscape, yeah.
Where I think this is the one where he's following that guy who's going to investigate the
gaunts.
And
if you think of a peak and a slope, I mean, they're kind of almost opposite. So the peak is the top, and the slope is what comes down.
It's J.K. Rowling notation for the traditional storyline arc. That's what it is, people.
Yeah.
Up to the climax of the book.
I think she's just playing with us.
I mean, seriously. I would go with, on one hand, I think we're sort of overthinking, and it's just easy because there are people around, and this is just the easiest way to have interaction, like what Sue said. On the other hand, none of them said Dumbledore gave this to me. It's so straight. Five people.
They seem like robotic until the note is out of their hand. And then, okay, now I can go about my business, sort of.
Maybe they're under instructions to do nothing but give that note to Harry the first second you see him.
Yeah.
So that Dumbledore is sure it will get to him.
Huh.
But why wouldn't he just have, you know, if he wanted to make sure it got to him, it just seems to me like if I could magically just say, here's a note,
give
I would
it to
just
Harry.
Do that.
Yeah, exactly.
It just seems so easy. Why would he have somebody hand deliver it? So that seems kind of odd, and it also makes me wonder if somebody's watching what they're doing, or if he realizes somebody's watching what they're doing, or
is there a trace on magic around Harry's? Is magic that's directed directly to him track? You know?
You know, diverting attention to Voldemort. And he knows Voldemort is obviously watching Harry and the mind thing and stuff. So. I don't know. That's an interesting point about using the magic as a protection kind of thing.
No, because then the magic is on the person.
Right.
And not the note. Harry just got a note, you know?
Right. But wouldn't that serve, though, to deflect the attention off of Harry, like saying that there's something going on or somehow? I don't know. Maybe. I don't know what. I don't know. Okay, maybe not. Never mind.
I guess, Sue, sometimes you just sort of, talk yourself out of your thought. It's adorable. It goes around in a circle. It's so cute. Yeah, anybody got any definitive thoughts?
My thought, and I thought this when I first read it, is that this is Joe's way of showing us that Harry has these connections that we haven't heard about. You know, there are other students, there are other friends. It's not just the people we hear about all the time, but there are these other guys, and maybe they'll be important later and do something later that we, you know, can't even foresee because we don't know what's coming, but it's just a good way to show that Harry is one of those guys that everybody wants to be around or get to know, or, you know, and he has a lot of allies that we don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Jason, what does the first passage say when Jack Sloper gives him the note?
They're talking about their defense against the dark arts lesson with Snape, and Hermione says that she thought Snape sounded a little bit like Harry when he was kind of getting so intense about everything. Let's see. She says, yes, when you were telling us what it's like to face Voldemort, you said it wasn't just memorizing a bunch of spells. You said it was just you and your brains and your guts. Well, wasn't that what Snape was saying? That it really comes down to being brave and quick-thinking? Harry was so disarmed that she had thought his words as well worth memorizing as a standard book of spells that he did not argue. Harry! Hey, Harry! Harry looked around. Jack Sloper, one of the beaters on last year's Gryffindor Quidditch team, was hurrying towards him, holding a roll of parchment. For you, panted Sloper. And then he just goes on and starts talking about Quidditch. Listen, I've heard you're the new captain. When are you holding trials?
Huh.
Yeah.
It sounds like he's making a beeline for him.
Yeah, I mean, he just sort of I picture him almost his arm straight out, holding this thing, just neek, 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 take this.
And now I can talk about Quidditch.
Yeah, exactly.
What's Ginny's?
Let's see, they're talking about, he's talking with Ron and Hermione as usual, and then a distraction arrived in the shape of Ginny. Hey, Harry, I'm supposed to give you this. It was a scroll of parchment with Harry's name written upon it in a familiar, thin, slanting writing. Thanks, Ginny. It's Dumbledore's next lesson. And then they just start talking about something else again.
Nothing about what she says next?
No, she just says, hey, Harry, I'm supposed to give you this.
Since it's two hey Harrys.
Right. The third one is Hermione, and she doesn't even say anything. Well, she does say earlier that she has something for him. Then she rummages around and just hands it to him. Fourth one is Luna, who says, I've been told to give you this, after, like, giving Ron a bunch of weird things from her pockets. And the fifth one, Jimmy Peaks, I don't think he says anything. Harry was shaken from these bitter reflections by the appearance at his side of Jimmy Peaks, who was holding out a scroll of parchment. Thanks, Jimmy. Hey, it's from Dumbledore. And I guess Jimmy just disappeared.
So that would be technically a walk-on part in the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's not like these people were going up to Harry anyway. At least Jimmy Peaks didn't seem to have any other reason. Whereas
yeah.
Jack Sloper did, Ginny did, Hermione did.
I guess they, yeah, but it doesn't seem like they, I wonder if they were already going to him or if they only, I mean, obviously Hermione, because they always seek each other out. But, you know, the other ones, it seemed like, well, they just, since they were there, they might have talked about something else, but.
Like maybe it happened right then, and then they felt that they had a note and were like,
oh maybe.
Must
yeah.
find Harry. You know?
I can kind of see that. It seems so weird and sort of unnecessary, but it does sort of have that feel, that sort of aura that something weird and magical is happening to them. Do we have to do the final thoughts on this one?
You know, there's a poll. If we don't do final thoughts, we can't do
right.
the poll.
Yeah.
I'll try. I think that Dumbledore, I don't know how he got these notes to these kids. Maybe it's magic. Maybe he just handed them to them. But I think he's trying to make Harry aware of the other people around him that are his friends, that are his allies, that he can count on, both those really close to him, like Hermione, and those just kind of, you know, on the fringes of his awareness, like his Quidditch player friends.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just really think it's our way of finding out that Harry has a lot of friends that aren't the same people that we hear about a lot, more people than just Dumbledore's army, but that he has a whole group of students who will be able to help him out in the next book.
What do you think, Sue?
I agree with that. I just think it's purely a literary device by Joe to establish Harry as you know, not a popular character among all of his classmates, not like, you know, just the regular, as you said, his regular Dumbledore's army, but it's also to just establish his popularity and his leadership role in the next book.
So it's more about Joe writing it that way than Dumbledore doing it that way.
Yeah, yes. I think it is clearly Joe's tactic, not a device on Dumbledore's part.
Okay.
That's what I think.
I'm just too much of a conspiracy theorist. That's why these books appealed to me in the first place, that that, you know, there's a mad plot always going on, and I just think it's too weird that nobody seems to know. Yeah. It's just too strange that nobody seems to know why or who or what. I think it's a safety precaution of some sort, and they're under a spell, and it's some way of protecting Harry or protecting him from being conspicuous. You know, and that it's protected. They can't read what's in the note.
I just wonder, like, if that's true, like, will that she even ever tell us? Like,
I know.
Like, how will that be revealed?
Hey, Harry, remember last year when you
were notes? Exactly.
Oh, that's the key to everything. Like, you know, I don't know.
I wonder, maybe he'll, like, ask one of them about, remember how you delivered that note to me from Dumbledore? And they'll be like,
and they'll
what?
Be like, what? Yeah, exactly.
Delivered who? What?
What do you mean?
But I don't know what possible thing that could lead him to, but, you know.
Maybe Harry telling Ginny about the Horcrux. Well, no, Ginny knows about the Horcruxes, right?
Yeah.
Maybe telling Luna about the Horcruxes.
Yeah, maybe Luna will be like, well, of course, one of the Horcruxes is the, you know, Brazilian dinky donk thing. And she'll lead him right to it. Yeah.
Oh gosh,
it's well known in my circle that
well, we can put that in the list of 10,012 questions we have for Joe.
That's right.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
All right, well, I think that about does it for this week's Canon Conundrums. We have about 24 weeks of Canon Conundrums before
that's
there's sort of
that incredible right?
Yeah,
wow.
I know. I can't take it. Anyway, what will we do with Canon Conundrums after the book comes out? I think there'll still be conundrums to talk about. We just won't ever be promised an answer.
Right.
Ever.
Yeah. Well,
it'd be fun to go back and see, like, look at the old Canon Conundrums and see,
that's,
you know, which ones did get answered, how close you were, etc.
We'll do a tally.
Oh, man, I can just tell you mine, not even close, right now.
Watch
big old blank on mine.
Watch Sue's down the line are just completely all on the money. I'm telling you, that's what's going to happen. This is all going to be about Hufflepuff in the end.
That's right. Yes. It's all roads lead to Hufflepuff, baby.
On that note.
All right.
We'll see you
on
guys
with
later.
The show.
On with the show.
We're now 23 weeks, 7, 6 days, and 23 hours away from Voldemort fighting it. I gotta tell you, I'm excited
Voldemort's
for that.
Voldemort's outside.
We have a big 24 weeks coming and plans for that on the way. The discussion on religion is still coming, just the release date threw us all for a loop. So
it's going to be huge.
Yeah. So with the release date coming out, our blog challenge sort of bit the dust. But we will put up, we haven't really had a chance because we've been so busy to look through them, but we'll look through more. And what do you guys think this week's blog challenge should be?
Where are you pre-ordering the book?
That's a boring blog challenge.
Are you going to be reading the book?
Are you going to be reading the book? They're going to say no.
How long do you think it will take you to read the book, and why?
Okay, that's it. How long do you think it will take you to read Deathly Hallows, and why? Blog about it. Say it was on Pottercast. Put up a link. We're going to be looking.
I'll be looking at all of them and reading them aloud to Sue.
Oh, lullabies from John.
Thank you.
Keep your phone nearby, Sue. I got a lot of blogs.
What? You're breaking that down. I can't hear you.
Another note. On another note, this is also part of our blog challenge. If you friend us on MySpace, add us to your top friends and let us know that you've done so, we'll give you a handy-dandy little shout-out right here. So let's start. This week's shout-outs are from Mary, Zane, Bree, Mindy, Hedwig June, Shard, Tom Stizo, Julie, Katie, Daniel, Mario, Rick, Day X Mokina. Oh, get it? Deus Ex Machina. Day X Mokina. That's really funny, actually.
Like Mushka?
Yeah. Looming the Dark Hokage.
Harry Rickards. Serenity Rose. Barbara Molini. Blake. Amber. Rebecca. Sarah. K. Jukebox Podcast. Dixie Princess. J. Leg. A-N-J-A-L-I. Debbie. Heather. Sandra. Steven. Jillian Weasley. 15. Zoe, Zoe, Brittany, Rabin, Alex, two X's, the Halls, Kayla, Layla, and Harry Potter fan 123, and Sasha.
So, I'm looking forward to our little trip, guys.
Yes, our little trip. Our little trip. I'm actually going to sail over there.
Oh.
Cannot afford the plane ticket
England.
This time, so I figure sailing would be much less expensive.
You know, I really would want to do that, though, one day. I want to take that, like, what is it called, the Queen Mary or whatever?
Does anybody ever do that?
Ship. I don't know.
That's a long time. For that money that it would cost for that trip, I would rather take get a nice ticket, like a first class, you know?
Yeah, I'll take a train ride around Europe.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
What if they had, like, a Harry Potter train ride that went, like, right past Joe's front yard?
You know, when I went to Edinburgh last time, I took a flight from London to Scotland, but I had two friends with me, and they took the train. They took the train right up into the Scottish, you know, and they said it was amazing. They felt like they were, you know, on the way to Hogwarts. It was cool.
I just have this such funny visual of a train traveling right by Joe's house and everybody waving and Joe lifting her head up from pulling weeds or something or trimming the flowers. He's just waving like it happens every day. Wouldn't that be a great way to finish the years? It would just be awesome.
The official.
She like waves a little notepad in the air. Maybe I'm writing something, she said.
She says, yeah, every day at 10 o'clock she goes out and waves at the train and goes by.
Exactly. Some days when she's feeling ornery, she moons the train.
Okay, before this conversation goes anywhere else...
Just go! You're wasting time!
I'm leaving. I don't know about you guys.
Oh.
You can stay if you want. I'm getting out of Dodge.
Okay.
Do you imagine
that's a good name with me.
Yes.
Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.
Laters.
Dobby is free.
Oh, and about time, too.
We've missed it.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now... If you two don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great, Scott. No wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours. Spooky how the time flies when one's having fun.
Hey,
So you can't call it the Uck, though, when you go over there. You can't say, I'm in the Uck.
I'm going to ask everybody and be like, where exactly in the Uck am I at this very moment?
They'll be like, get out of our country. I can just see it.
At which point they punch me in the face. Be like, oh, I know.
Our cast comes to England. We cause international
downtown
incidents. Headlines are reported.
I know.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
I'm going to walk on the wrong side of the road and just confuse everybody.
No. You're gonna be confused, really, when you get hit by a car?
Well, that won't be my fault.
Yeah.
You have to yield to me.
All right.
You have to yield to pedestrians
I
in the
I really
air?
Hope so.
Wish us luck, everyone. Ooh, I just wish.
Be like Borat, chasing on the buses.
Thank you for trying to cover for my yet another blundering of the word Edinburgh.
Oh, dude.
Oh my God! Wow. Shoot me now! Shoot me now!
I'll just draw all the attention towards my Edinburgh.
Oh, no.
The Edinburgh.
Editors, please, if there's a way to cut that out, somehow me slaughtering that word. Save me, Jeff, Mike, and JM in this.
No.
Michael.
Michael. I'm calling him Michael from now on. Jeff, call him Michael.
I did to Chris Rankin, and he almost killed me. He's like, do not call me Christopher. I said, okay.
You should call him, like, Merv or something.
It's Merv.
That would have really pissed him off.
It's Merv, his evil twin.
Yeah. I'm Carol.